One of my favorite things to cook with, and I love to cook, one of my favorite things to cook with is this device right here. It's called a sous vide. And basically, you can cook just about anything with this. You kind of hook it on a pot or some kind of other container, and essentially, it heats the water inside the pot, and it circulates the water inside the pot, and you can cook anything with one of these bad boys. You can cook steak, chicken, fish, risotto, veggies, dessert. Doesn't matter. All you have to do, you know, whatever you're going to be cooking, whatever you're going to be preparing, you got to put it in a bag, vacuum seal that bag, put it under pressure, and then submerge it under the water, and then you just set the temperature of the sous vide, and it will circulate that water and keep that water at that particular temperature for the entirety of the cooking process. And when I tell you, you can't mess this up. When I say you can't mess it up, I mean you cannot mess this up. If you're making steak this Memorial Day weekend and you got one of these, you can set it to 128 degrees because that's about the perfect degree, 128 degrees. You can put it in there, and if company's late, doesn't matter. It's not like cooking on a stove because you can let this bad boy sit in there for about 2 hours, and it's not going to cook above 128 degrees. It's impossible to screw up a steak. You can do it on a grill. I've had some of your all steaks. You can mess it up on a grill. You can mess it up in the oven. You can mess it up on the cooktop, but I'm telling you, it is basically impossible to mess up a steak or fish or chicken. You just set the temperature, and then you come back an hour and a half, 2 hours later, you take it out, and if you want to sear it, you put it in a nice hot iron cast skillet, put some butter and rosemary. Can I get a witness, somebody in the house? And you put it out there, you get it nice and crisp, and then you take it off, and it's going to be perfect. I mean, it's going to be absolutely perfect. Now, when this was first marketed to the average consumer, because they used these in restaurants for years, and it was like, you know, a great kept secret in the restaurant industry. But when they first started marketing these to the average consumer, it was touted as foolproof because, hey, you can't mess this up. And the marketers, they weren't wrong. The only way that I can see that you can mess this up is if you want to mess this up. And so this is my favorite thing to cook with. And, you know, Memorial Day, I figure we could talk about food, and that's just going to make you hungry and want you to get out of church earlier, but that's okay. I'm going to be just on time as usual. So my favorite cookbook is by the Barefoot Contessa, Ina Garten. Her flavor profile, it just hits different than anybody else. I've loved her show for years. I've got all of her cookbooks. I've got just hundreds of her recipes. But my favorite cookbook by the Barefoot Contessa is one entitled Foolproof. And there are some amazing recipes in here. I mean, there's a meatloaf that is to kill for. There's foolproof ribs. I mean, you just can't mess it up. There's barbecue sauce. I mean, it's incredible from start to finish. Though some of you are real Baptists, the first 15 pages of cocktails, you can just skip over that. But the next part, you know, whether you're talking about appetizers or entrees or desserts, I mean, it's foolproof. And the idea is that she's made these so many times, they are tried and true. That if you get the ingredients as the ingredients are listed, and if you apply the ingredients as she has instructed that you apply them, then the outcome is going to be very predictable time and time and time again. And the outcome is just going to be amazing. I mean, it's going to be tasty. It's going to be wonderful. Now, her recipes are no different than really anybody else's, because that's the idea behind a recipe. You take the ingredients, you apply them in a certain way, you go about it in a certain method, and the outcome becomes predictable. That's the reason I don't understand why some people say, I can't cook. I just can't cook. I just can't cook. You should just shut up. I mean, go ahead and say, I don't cook. I won't cook, but don't say I can't cook. Just follow the freaking recipe, would you? Go to the grocery store, buy what it says to buy, then go home and follow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 until you're finished. And you know what'll happen? You will have cooked. And you will have cooked well. All right, so that's my favorite cookbook. My favorite knife sharpener, and I do have a favorite knife sharpener, because a dull knife is a dangerous knife, FYI, PSA. And so, you know, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. And, you know, you just take your favorite knife and you just run it through there, whether it's a straight blade or a serrated knife, doesn't really matter. And you just do it 3 times on each side. three times on each side of number two, three times on each side on number three, and at the end you've got a really sharp knife that's gonna cut through anything. And again, this was touted as foolproof because it does all the work for you. It does all the thinking for you. All you have to do is take a knife and put it where it says the knife goes and pull it through. Sounds pretty easy because it is. And then you put it in the other side and you pull it through and it sounds easy because it is. And you know what? At the end of that, you've got a sharp knife. Now, I think it looks really cool to hold up a leather belt and rub a knife on. I don't know what it does, but it looks really cool. I mean, this looks, I mean, it's like the epitome of a man card is you have a leather belt and you're just running a knife on it. It may just be for show, but I'm telling you, I've seen people do it on TV and it does look nice. So if you want to do this first and then take a belt and then demonstrate how good your belt skills are at sharpening your knife, hey, go ahead. Nobody will know the difference, but this is just so easy. You can't mess this up. Now, you have your favorite items. I have my favorite items, and we've got products that we love more than others. But here's what I think. I think our favorite items are those that are just intuitive. It's just easy for us to use. It makes sense. It's very difficult for us to mess it up. And those products, those items become some of our favorite things to use because we love foolproof. And when you talk about foolproof, foolproof means it's just so simple, it's so plain, it's so reliable, it's so safe. It leaves virtually no opportunity for error or misuse or failure. And so marketers, they've used this for years and years and years. Hey, this is foolproof, this is foolproof, this is foolproof. But here's the question. Have you ever thought about who those marketers are talking to when they're promoting those items which are foolproof? They're talking to people who can make a mess of things without even having to try to make a mess of things. That's who they're talking to. If you can make a mess of things without trying to make a mess of things, they are talking to you. They're talking to people who can easily lose focus. They're talking to people who can become easily distracted. They're talking about people who can make a bad decision without even trying to make a bad decision. That's who they're talking to. They're talking to people who make a mess of things without even trying. People who are at times not always exercising the best judgment. They're talking to people who are not always easy at following directions. They're talking to people who get so distracted that they lose focus on what they're supposed to be doing and how they're supposed to be doing it. That's who they're talking to. They're talking to people who get rushed, and in their rush, they skip over important steps. Important steps that's gonna come back to bite them in the tail later on. They're talking to people who can just misunderstand what the next best step is supposed to be. They're talking to people who at times think, you know what? I don't need instructions. I don't need to read this book. I can just figure this out on my own. In other words, when marketers are promoting items that are foolproof, they're talking to you and they're talking to me. They're talking to all of us because in the words of the great prophet and sage and Sherpa of life, Smokey Robinson, he said, they don't tell you this in school. It may be factual, it may be cruel. There's no exception to the rule. Everybody plays the fool. We all have the capacity to play the fool. Now, a large portion, it just dawned on me, the demographic of our church, you are now Googling Smokey Robinson. Like, who in the world? Just trust me. It's a great song, but it's true. Because we all have the capacity to play the fool. And let's just be honest. We've all played the role of the fool before. We've all said foolish things. Let me just see, you know, just a show of hands. Let's just all vote on this so we can know that we're all in the same boat with the same kind of people. All of our campuses, if you've ever said something foolish, just raise a hand. All right? All right. Most of us, a few of you are either just dead or lying or just not paying attention. We've all made foolish decisions. We've all made a mess out of things at times without actually trying to make a mess of things. We've all gotten things wrong before, and because we got it wrong, we had to deal with the consequences on the backside. We've all exercised a lack of good judgment at some point or the other in your life or mine. At some point, we've all gotten distracted and we lost focus on what we were supposed to be doing and how we were supposed to be doing it. At some point, we've all failed to listen to good advice. good instruction, good counsel. And because of our failure to listen to good counsel and good instruction and good advice, it cost us. We've all played the fool. But what if there was a way to foolproof your life and foolproof my life? What if there was a way that life could become so simple, so plain, so safe, that it virtually eliminated our ability to make a mess of things? That it basically marginalized our ability to screw things up because we skipped a step or we made a wrong turn because we weren't sure of the turn to make or we weren't sure of what the next step needed to be. What if we could foolproof our life? What if as parents, we could help foolproof our children's lives? What if as friends, we could help foolproof one another's lives? There is a way to foolproof your life and mine, and the scripture calls it wisdom. Let's all just say this together. Wisdom. One more time. Wisdom. When it comes to wisdom, many of you already know this, there's no other book in all of the scripture that is more dedicated to illuminating and demonstrating what wisdom is and what wisdom looks like more so than the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is essentially a practical guide. It's a guidebook on how to foolproof your life. Really, that ought to be the subtitle in our English version of our book of Proverbs in the Old Testament. This is how to foolproof your life. Now, just to give you a little bit of a context for Proverbs, Proverbs is not a book that contains moral law. That would be the book of the law. That would be the first five books of the Old Testament. That would be the Pentateuch. Those would be the books of Moses. The book of Proverbs is not a book of moral law. It's not a book full of commandments or rules. Rather, it's a book of accumulated insight. It's a book of common sense that has been jotted down. It's a book full of practical knowledge. And in the book of Proverbs, we're presented with the same reality that we are presented with in Genesis 1, which was in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And again, I'll say this for the benefit of us all. It really doesn't matter the process by which God created the heavens and the earth. What really matters is that God created the heavens and the earth. Not the process, it's the person behind the process. So in Genesis, we're told that God created the heavens and the earth. But in the book of Proverbs, we're told something very interesting. That when God created the heavens and the earth, that God designed this world with a fabric of wisdom already created within it. There's a universal wisdom woven into the fabric of reality, that there is a predictability to life based on certain choices that you can make and that I can make. There is a recipe that ensures certain outcomes. There's ingredients to your life and my life that has a predictable outcome to it. That if we take these ingredients and we apply them at the particular way they're supposed to be applied, and we do it at the right time, in the right way, there's a predictable outcome. That is to say that God created the heavens and the earth with universal causes and effects. That there's cause and there's effect. And these causes and effect in your life and my life lead to predictable outcome based on our personal choices. And we already know this is true. We parent intuitively based on this truth. We would all agree that discipline, hard work, having a vision for the future, and planning and taking action in the direction of success, it actually helps ensure that we will have success. But laziness, lack of vision, lack of action, that seldom ever results in success because it's a universal cause and effect. Not spending more money than you make is good anywhere, at any time, for anyone on this planet. It's a universal baked-in principle of wisdom. When you save and invest for later, it's always a good thing. It's good anywhere, anytime, for anyone. So when it comes to the Proverbs, these are not about cultural interpretations of moral law, which you have to apply throughout the Old Testament. Like, there's moral laws, and then there's interpretations about what those moral laws mean, and we do the same in the New Testament. When Paul says this, we overlay certain interpretational, rules, and we try to figure out the context, and we try to figure out what he was saying to who he was saying it to, but that's not the case in Proverbs. There's no cultural interpretation because this is true anywhere, anytime, for anyone. Speaking without thinking, not a good idea. for anyone, any place, at any time. Saying too much, never a good idea. And it's true for anyone, anytime, any place. So you get the idea. These are principles. These are precepts. These are little bits of counsel, little bits of advice that's true for everyone at every time, including you and including me. And these have been true for hundreds of years, thousands of years. This has been true since the dawn of humanity because God baked this wisdom into the universe that if we follow the guidance of wisdom, there can be predictable outcomes in your life and mine. And it leads to a life well lived. It leads us to be able to get the most out of life, to get the best out of life in all the areas. Because when you read through Proverbs, it deals with business and it deals with finance and it deals with relationships and leadership and decision-making and parenting and just life in general. Almost anything that you can think of that comprises life, you'll find it in the book of Proverbs. And within all of those areas of your life and mine, there are baked in paths of wisdom, guidance, causes and effect that's true for anyone, anytime, at any place. And God has invited us to get this wisdom in order to foolproof our life. In other words, wisdom helps us make better decisions and have fewer regrets. And who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want better decisions and fewer regrets? How many of us have a list of regrets because we didn't make so good of a decision once upon a time at a certain place? So better decisions, fewer regrets. Better decisions, fewer regrets. And that's what wisdom is all about. And that's what Proverbs is all about. This is what wisdom is, and this is what wisdom looks like. So in order to do this, and I'm setting this up for the rest of the summer that we're gonna be talking about this, but I want you to understand kind of the basis of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs does this in so many different ways. It shows us what wisdom is, and it shows us what wisdom looks like in so many different ways. And in order to demonstrate it, and in order to illustrate it for us in the clearest of terms, you'll find all different kinds of characters throughout the book of Proverbs. And I'm gonna give us four, because all of them represent an absence of wisdom. And all of them are characters that we recognize in our life, and perhaps we've even been these people at certain times in our life. One particular person the book of Proverbs highlights is the simple or the simpleton. They're not carefree. Nothing wrong with being carefree. I wish I could be more carefree sometimes. They're not carefree. They're just careless. They don't think very much. And when they do, they don't think very well. Now you've got people coming to your mind. They don't think very much. And when they do, they don't think very well. These folks, simpletons, simple men, simple women, simple teenagers, they fail to count the cost of their choices. They fail to remember that their choices do have consequences. And sometimes those consequences are residue, which sticks with us for longer than we would like. They're residual consequences from our choices. And the simple person doesn't think about this when they're making choices. They're just making choices that are right in front of them in the moment. The simpleton, we're told in the book of Proverbs, they fail to break generational tendencies and generational cycles and generational dysfunction. So whatever dysfunctions their mom and dad had, they just take on themselves because they're a product of their environment, and they choose not to rise above their environment, and they choose not to break out of their environment. So they continue on with the generational dysfunctions of mom and dad and grandpa and grandma. These simpletons are empty containers. That's the Hebrew language on it. So they're easily influenced. They're just empty. They don't think very much. And when they do, they don't think very well because they don't think on their own very much. They're easily influenced. They're easily distracted. They don't anticipate what's around the corner. They don't anticipate that they're going to grow older one day and saving today might be important then now. They fail to remember that their bodies are getting older, so to take care of their physical bodies today is gonna be even more important then. They don't anticipate these things. They don't have a plan. They live in the moment, and they forget that the moment that they live in is connected to all the moments that are gonna come after it. There's a couple of different verses that really capture the simpleton, and one's Proverbs 22:3. The prudent see danger and take refuge. That's the wise. They see danger, they anticipate it, They're able to read into the situation. They're able to play the tape out. And so they see the danger and they change course. But the simple keep going. They don't see what the wise see. They're not paying attention to what the wise are paying attention to. And so they just keep going. And because of it, they have to pay the piper. They pay the penalty. That's the simpleton. We don't want to be the simpleton. And so the Proverbs talks about the simple. Second person you're going to find in Proverbs is the scoffer or the mocker. This is the jaded, cynical, critical, hard-hearted, proud, arrogant, quick to speak, always got an opinion, quicker though to ridicule others, and slowest of all to learn. These people sow discord, they sow disruption, they're antagonistic and argumentative, not in order to discover what's true, but they're argumentative and they're antagonistic in order to belittle anyone. They have a cold heart and a closed mind. That's the characteristics that we find in Proverbs. Their path is one of isolation and self-destruction. They don't like to be in community with people. They don't like close friendships with people. They like to keep it surface. They like to keep it shallow. You're not going to go deep with this person. You're not going to have vulnerability with this person. You're just not going to get there. So they isolate and they self-destruct and they have contempt. Though they may not say it, but they have contempt for wisdom. They're not teachable. They have contempt for instruction, and because of it, it ultimately leads to their downfall. Here's what the Proverbs says. Do not rebuke mockers or they will hate you. They're not interested in being helped. They're not interested in wisdom. They're not interested in insight. They're not interested in doing better. They're interested in doing it their way. That's the scoffer, that's the mocker. Another proverb says, drive out the mocker and out goes strife because they sow disruption and disunity. Quarrels and insults are ended. If you notice little family circles or certain people, certain relationships, that it's always, there's just strife. There's always just insults and there's quarrels and all of these things. And that's a mocker. That's a scoffer. And the proverb says that person lacks wisdom. So don't be that person. And then there's the sluggard. I love that term. We should use this more often. The sluggard. This is the person who is the epitome of laziness and complacency. Laziness and complacency, whose life is marked by inertia and missed opportunities because they will not act. They live life with a myriad of excuses of why they can't and why they don't and why they shouldn't. There's always an excuse of why they shouldn't do what they know that they should do. And there's always an excuse of why they can't do what somebody else has done that proved to be the best thing to do. They're just not interested. They would rather opt for comfort rather than the hard work that success requires. We live in a culture that wants people's success. We love their success, but we don't spend any time thinking about all the hard work and the choices and the discipline that it took for them to have that success. The sluggard just wants the end result, but they don't want to pay the price of everything that is required on the front side. These folks refuse to take responsibility for their life. They abdicate their potential. They've got a lot of potential, but they don't fulfill it because they're just lazy. They're afraid to act. They're afraid to fail. They just don't do anything. And because of it, they have this deep sense of disappointment and this deep sense of discontentment in their life because they're confronted with the reality that they're not doing anything with their life. They're not reaching their potential. And there's something that God's wired into all of us that when we're not reaching our potential, there is a discontentment in that. There is an unhappiness in that. Here's what the proverb says. Sluggards do not plow in season, which is what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. So at harvest time, because hey, harvest time's coming. But you're not plowing and planting in harvest season. That comes later. But sluggards are not thinking about later. They don't plow in season. So at harvest time, they look. Where's my crops? Let me check my retirement account. Oh, nothing. Huh. How did that happen? They don't do what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. So later on, there's nothing to show for it. And again, we live in a culture that says, you know what? It shouldn't matter whether or not you do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. Let's just do it for you. Let's just foster irresponsibility. Let's just drive irresponsibility generationally into families in certain geographical areas in our country, Appalachia being one of them. Let's just make not working and not planning, let's just make it a virtue. Let's just make it gaming the system and everybody can feel fine about it because surely somebody out there will pay for it. That's a concept that's not very American these days. Let's just borrow it to pay for it. I'm not trying to be political, but you get the idea. It's not political. This is life, and this is as old as we are. People who don't plow in season but want to harvest. That is ignoring the universal cause and effect of what God has baked into the universe. I'm not talking about generosity. I'm not talking about compassion. I'm just talking about this is how God says the world is wired. A sluggard buries his hand in the dish. Don't think he made it. Don't think he cooked it. Maybe somebody gave him a bowl of soup. But he won't even bring it to his mouth. Wow, so many things come to mind. So you got the sluggard, absent of wisdom. And the Proverbs would say, don't be that person. Don't be lazy. Don't spend your life failing to act, failing to do what is necessary. Don't be the person who backs up from hard work just because it's hard. It's hard work for a reason, because the payoff is gonna be worth the hard work. This is wisdom, and sluggards can't see it. They want to harvest just like everybody else, but they don't plow and they don't plant. And they won't even do what's best for themselves. They've got the dish in front of them, but they won't even feed themselves. He says, you shouldn't be that person. And then there's the fool, which kind of encapsulates all of them, but the fool is like the top shelf. I mean, the fool is like at the top of the hierarchy. They're reckless. They're like a ship without a rudder that's adrift in a sea headed towards certain destruction. That's the picture of the fool in Proverbs. They refuse to learn from failure. They refuse to learn from other people's failure. They just refuse to learn. They are full of self-sabotage. They self-sabotage and ultimately they self-destruct. That's the fool. And again, we can all play the fool. We've all been the fool. Every single one of us has the capacity to be this person that self-sabotages and self-destructs, and we refuse to learn from our failure. We refuse to learn to other people's failure. Here's the verse that I think that captures the fool maybe better than any of them. A dog, as a dog returns to its own vomit, so fools repeat their folly. That's been me. I've licked my own vomit before. Figuratively. So have you. And the Proverbs says, that's just not a pretty picture of how to live life. Don't do that. Like, don't do that. Don't be the fool. And don't give yourself over to the folly of self-destruction and self-sabotage. So Proverbs says, we want... All the voices of wisdom say collectively, we want to offload, download wisdom into your life so that you can foolproof your life, so you're not the scoffer, you're not the mocker, you're not the simpleton, you're not the sluggard. So Proverbs 1 begins this way, and this kind of sets up, you know, the rest of the series and the rest of the book. It begins in chapter 1, verse 1, says, the Proverbs of Solomon, and we've heard of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now, Solomon is like the godfather of wisdom literature in the Jewish Bible. You've got Ecclesiastes, you've got Job, you've got the book of Proverbs. And Solomon, if you know anything about Solomon, Solomon was a student of wisdom. He sought wisdom from an early age. He always had an inclination for learning. He wanted to understand things. And so along in his life, he began to pin down things and he began to collect sayings. And sometimes he imported them from other cultures and from other teachers. But Solomon, he would collect all of these sayings of wisdom. And really that's what Proverbs are. They're what one person said, they're short sentences born out of long experiences. So long experiences in someone's life, both positive and negative, out of those long experiences, someone deduced that season, the cause and effect. the path that led to that outcome. They deduced it down to a short sentence, and that's a proverb. Solomon, now, if you know anything about Solomon, he knew what was right, but he didn't always do what was right. And what was true of Solomon is true for all of us. Many times, it's not an issue of whether we know what is right, it's an issue of whether we do what is right. He knew what was right, but he didn't always do right, and that's what we call being human. But he learned his lessons. Sometimes they were hard, sometimes they were painful. And he would take these long experiences from his life and he would just put a sentence. He would put two sentences or three sentences. And he says, listen, what I went through for 5 years, what I went through for 10 years, what I went through for 20 years, I'm gonna give it to you in three sentences. And if you'll follow the recipe, if you'll take the ingredients, if you'll apply it the way that I tell you to apply it, there is a universal cause and effect that God baked into the world, and you can have a predictable outcome in your life based on what I've learned in mine and what other people have learned in theirs. And so his greatest motivation, it seems like in Proverbs, is like the heart of a dad. And he wants to pass this wisdom off into the next generation. So you find the term son, and you find the term children, and you find the term mother and father and parent and all of this. It's all about offloading into the next generation the wisdom of the previous generation so that the next generation doesn't have to misstep, so that the next generation doesn't have to make the wrong turn, so that the next generation doesn't have to make the very painful choices that will become very hard lessons that they had to learn. So it's the next generation who's benefiting. It's the people who've gone before us who preserve these proverbs, these wisdoms, and they pass on to us. And that's what he's doing. So he says, these are the proverbs of Solomon, and the purpose are for gaining wisdom, instruction, for understanding words of insight. Wisdom being the ability to live life with skill. You see somebody who can play the piano with skill. You see somebody who can play the guitar with skill. Someone who can play the violin. A surgeon who's skillful with the scalpel. A person, you know, who's skillful with oration and with words. A person who's skillful with the pencil or with the brush. He says, that's what Proverbs is all about, is to make you skillful, to make you distinguished in your skill at how good you are at living life, that you're able to live life well. You're able to get the most out of life. That's what wisdom is. It's skill, it's dexterity, to know how to live in all the areas of life. It's about instruction, which is direction for your life, because direction is what determines destination. It's not intention that determines destination. It's not wishing that determines destination. It's not even our prayers that determine our destination. It's our action. It's our decisions. It's what we do that determines where we end up. It's how God baked in universal wisdom into the universe. And he says, and you can gain insight. Solomon says, this is why I'm writing this. Wisdom, instruction, insight. We've all heard of hindsight. All right? You know this. Hindsight is what? Talk to me. 2020. You can get on the other side of something and look back, and you can do what doctors call the M&M, and you can do the dissection of what happened in that whole, you know, series of events with a patient that may have not had the best outcome, and you try to learn from it. You know, hindsight is you look back and you're able to see it with 2020 clarity. The clarity is unsurpassed. You look back and you're like, oh yeah, that was a wrong turn. Oh yeah, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done this. I should have done this. I should have done that. This is when I should have done it. This is how I should have done it. And it's clarity. And if you could go back and relive that moment with hindsight, you would know exactly what to do. But that's not how life works. But that's okay, because he's offering us something called insight. And insight is just like hindsight, except instead of being on the backside, we get it on the front side, when it still can serve us well. Insight that we're able to see into a situation, we're able to anticipate, we're able to kind of size things up and say, okay, if I do this, this might happen. If I do this, that might happen. Insight allows me to see ahead of time the best path to take, the best decisions to make, what I should say, what I shouldn't say. And insight trumps hindsight every single time, because you see broader, deeper, further, and you see into things in a way that brings enlightenment. And as you have enlightenment, things are not dark and things are not dim. And so you know the sure path to take. And he goes on, he says, it's for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right, what is just, what is fair. He goes on, he says, for giving prudence. This is about giving prudence to those who are simple. If you're simple, it's gonna help you. It's knowledge and discretion to the young or the inexperienced. Insight, wisdom, perspective, knowledge. You can be, you ever heard the term, wiser than your years? You can be dumber than your years? You can be wise as your years. But what if you can be wiser than your years? And Proverbs says, that's what we're offering. You can have the wisdom of someone who's lived generations worth of life, generations worth of experiences. And you can take what has been learned by others, and even though you're young and inexperienced, you can leverage this for your own good in order to live life the best you can possibly live this life. You can learn from other people's experiences so that you don't have to learn the hard way. So the prologue, the introduction, he says, so let the wise listen, lean in, and let them add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For those who are humble enough to say, you know what? I want wisdom. I need wisdom. I don't want to be simple. I don't want to be the sluggard. I don't want to be the scoffer. I don't want to be the fool. He says, lean in and listen. Pay attention. For understanding proverbs and parables, these sayings and riddles of the wise. Understand what this book is saying. Understand what it means. Understand what the application looks like. Because in the application of these principles, there is a predictable outcome in your life and mine. And then he says this, he throws this in here, which kind of is an overshadowing truth throughout the book of Proverbs, and we've all heard this one before. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge or the beginning of wisdom. But fools, and there it is, there's the contrast. The wise and the fool. The wise and the fool. The wise fear the Lord. That's the beginning of their wisdom. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. They don't want any part of it. They don't think they need it. And this fear is not, I'm scared of God. Oh my God, I'm scared of God. What does God think about me? How does God feel about me? Now, this is about respect. This is about reverence. This is about acknowledging that he'll talk about in Proverbs 3, that you acknowledge God in all your ways. You recognize the reality of God in all your ways. You acknowledge his truth. You acknowledge his existence. And you live in that reality where life is just not about you. You are not the center of the universe. You are not the most important. There is something transcendent. There is something greater. There is a God who created us that we are accountable to. There is this God who loves us. There is this God who is so gracious. He's given us this gift of wisdom so that we can live life and enjoy it. Yeah, life's tough and life hurts and life throws a lot of things at us. But wisdom can make life better. And this reality of God, it's a paradigm that we discover later on. It brings life to life. It brings meaning and purpose to life and to all the segments of life. And so he teases this out a little bit more, but then he begins to wrap it up towards the end of the chapter. And he says, listen, wisdom is calling. Wisdom is inviting. That's what the book of Proverbs is. It's an invitation to come in and sit and listen and learn. And what I love about wisdom is personified as this incredibly gifted, talented woman who is this master teacher. And wisdom, this master teacher, she invites us to sit down in her classroom and to learn from her. That's the picture of Proverbs. He goes on to say, he says, out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. On top of the wall, she cries out. At the city gate, she makes her speech. She's inviting us in. And she asks a question, rhetorical question, all of us. How long will you who are simple love your simple ways? How long? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? How long will you continue to settle for less? How long will you continue to live below your potential? How long will you continue to unnecessarily make a mess of things, even when you're not intending to make a mess of things? How long will you continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over again? How long will you continue to carry on the dysfunction from your previous generations within your family on into your generation and pass it on to your children? How long are you gonna hold on to those well-worn excuses about why you can't and why you shouldn't and why you don't? How long are you gonna make life harder than it has to be? Life's hard. Life's hard. Nobody's saying that it's not, but we can make life harder than it has to be. And wisdom says, if you live without me, you're gonna make life harder than it has to be. So, repent at my rebuke. And if you remember back a few series ago, this is all about changing our thinking. This is about changing our fundamental beliefs. This is about changing our perspective. This is about changing our filter. Repent at my rebuke. Listen to what I say and adjust your thinking accordingly. Then I will pour out my thoughts to you. Now all of a sudden you will have a grid work of wise thinking. Your thinking will be influenced by wisdom. Your perspective will be enlightened by wisdom. Your filter will be infused with wisdom. And I will make known to you my teachings. You'll have a new pattern of thinking and a new way of seeing your life and the life that plays out around you. But since, and hopefully this is not true of any of us, but since you refuse to listen when I call, and no one pays attention when I stretch out my hand, when you think this is not a big deal, it's not important, doesn't matter, one day maybe, you disregard all my advice, you do not accept my rebuke, you just brush it aside. It's not a big deal, it's not a priority. What's it matter? Too busy, too many things going on. And then this personification of wisdom kind of paints us into a poetic corner and says, I then in turn will laugh when disaster strikes you. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. Listen to this language. Calamity overtakes you. When disaster strikes you. She's not talking about the random happenings of life. This is not about driving down the road and an accident happens. This is not about a disease. This is not about a diagnosis. This is about the disaster that we chose our way into. This is about the calamity that's overtaking us because we lacked wisdom. She goes on to say, when calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you, then they will call to me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, but will not find me. Since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and they spurn my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. In other words, there is a cause and effect that God has wired into the universe, and there are principles and precepts and counsel and advice that if you apply, you can avoid calamity, the trouble that overwhelms you, the storm. In other words, the storm, the calamity, the distress that overwhelms you. It could have all been avoided. You made life harder than it had to be because you refused to follow the proven path of wisdom. Your choices, because they're foolish, because they're simple, because you're a scoffer, because you're a sluggard. Your choices have invited disorder and dysfunction into your life. And now you're gonna eat the fruit of the field you planted. And that fruit's gonna fill your life. And it's not gonna be the life that you want. In other words, you can't pray your way out of a circumstance you behaved yourself into. Now, we wish we could, but you can't pray yourself out of what you chose your way into. You got to choose your way out of it. You can pray about it, but you're going to have to back out the same way you walked in. You're going to have to make changes and adjustment. You're going to have to apply the principles and the precepts and the counsel of wisdom. If you're always in a financial storm because of overspending, stop praying about it and stop overspending. If you're always getting into trouble because you're talking too freaking much, shut up if you keep making the same mistake over and over again, if I keep making the same mistake over and over again, I gotta figure it out. You gotta figure it out. If laziness is upending your life, robbing you of potential, keeping you from what you ultimately desire for your life, then you gotta learn some discipline. You gotta get a work ethic. You gotta get a job. You gotta do the things you have to do to get to the places that you wanna go. And the same is true. Could tease this out all day long. And then he ends with saying, for the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But here's the contrast. But whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. You know what the choices are? Destruction and death, safety and ease. It's almost an echo of the moral law of Moses. Today I set before you life and death. Choose life so that it goes well with you, and not only goes well for you, but goes well for your children and their children. The proverb says in every circumstance of life, there's a choice. When it comes to your physical health, there's a choice. When it comes to business, when it comes to parenting, when it comes to professional life, there's a choice. And without wisdom, there's destruction, there's death. Wisdom has the capacity to insulate us from the calamity brought on by our own choices. So Moses said, life and death, choose life. The proverb says there's the way of the fool and the way of the wise. Choose the way of the wise. And then Jesus kind of tied it all together. He said, let me tell you the parable about two builders. Life was hard for both of them because life's hard. Both had storms. The wind blew for both. The rains fell on both. Life was hard for both. But one decided to be foolish and made things harder and worse than they had to be. One was wise and things were a little easier and a little better. Jesus says that the wise build upon the rock and the foolish build upon the sand. And then when life got hard, the foolish, there was destruction. But for the wise, even though they went through the same circumstance, they lived the same life, they were still standing at the end of it. And Jesus made wisdom a matter of taking what we know we should do and actually doing them. Taking it and applying it. That wisdom becomes the rudder and the anchor that helps us keep going in the right direction. And for Jesus, it's his teachings that become the guardrails. It becomes the focus, it becomes the target. It becomes the thing which helps us keeping, you know, from making a mess of things when we don't wanna make a mess of things. And it keeps us from making the costly wrong turns and the bad decisions. And Jesus said that wisdom is taking all of this stuff that is true and beginning to try to apply it, to live it out, to do what James said, to not just be hearers of what's true, but to begin to be doers of what's true. Because in what's true, there's life and there's peace and there's freedom and wisdom. So we all need it. I hope we all want it. So how do we get it? It's quite easy, and this is it. We ask. Same half-brother Jesus said, hey, if any of you lack wisdom, just ask God. He gives it generously and ungrudgingly. It'll be given to him or to her. What a great way to begin the day. Father, would you give me the wisdom today to know the best thing to do and the resolve, the commitment to do it, even if it's hard? God, would you give me the wisdom to use the teachings of my Savior as the guide and the target and the guardrails and the focus? Father, would you just give me wisdom? What a great way to start the day. Just, God, would you give me wisdom? And then be a student of wisdom. Listen to wise people. Read wise sayings. Because God has wired wisdom into the fabric of reality. And when we follow the path of wisdom, wisdom keeps us from making life harder than it has to be by making life better than what it could have been without it. So that's what we're gonna talk about all summer long. how to make life just a little better and a little easier by following the path of wisdom. Because wisdom is this good gift of God's grace that's true for anyone, anytime, any place. Father, I pray that today we would just start asking, if we've not already been asking, God, would you give us wisdom? In our businesses, would you give us wisdom? In our relationships, would you give us wisdom? In our parenting, would you give us wisdom? In our finances, would you give us wisdom? Would you give us wisdom when it comes to our own personal physical health? Would you give us wisdom as it relates to how we manage our emotions and, God, our decision-making? And God, would you just give us wisdom? Because you said if we ask, you would give it. And God, all throughout history, generations of men and women have asked for wisdom, and God, you have given it to them. And I pray that we'll remind ourselves today that that same God listens to us today and offers us free wisdom that makes life a little easier, a little bit better, when we take those words and we apply it to our lives. So God, may we be people filled with wisdom. In Jesus' name. And everybody said,